Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, 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 my friends, to Blog Talk Radio's Off the Shelf for this beautiful, beautiful Saturday, October the 23rd. We are coming to the end of October. Oh, my goodness. I just thank you so much for being here with us this morning as you tune in to Off the Shelf, whether you're driving in your car or whether you've got your internet up at home and you're working or cleaning your house as you listen to the show, because you can listen to Off the Shelf from anywhere depending on the electronic devices that you have. And make sure you go out and tell your friends and your family members and your colleagues to tune in so they can listen to our special guests and what they share every Saturday at 11 o'clock, just 1 hour of your time and benefits and blessings that will go with you for forever. So I encourage you to tune in and to encourage your friends and others to also tune in. For those who are tuning in for the first time, I want to introduce myself. This is our 6th year on the radio, and I am your host, Denise Turney, coming to you live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I always thank you for your support. And I encourage you not to let another day pass before you pick up a copy of Long Walk Up. Long Walk Up is a powerfully moving and inspirational book that you will be blessed to add to your book collection. And you can pick up a copy of Long Walk Up today by visiting www.chistel.com. You can also pick up a copy of Long Walk Up at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders, any bookstore. If you don't see it on the shelf, just ask the clerk for it. She can order it for you because it's carried by the largest book distributors in the world. And now, without further delay, what you all have been waiting for, let us go and meet our very special off-the-shelf guest for this week. And our special guest today is the author of the book Stone Heart. He is online at www.stoneheartbx.com, and that's StoneHeartBX.com. Again, StoneHeartBX.com. And we are delighted to have him here with us this morning on Off the Shelf. Welcome, welcome, Kevin Thomas to Off the Shelf.
Okay, good morning. Thank you, Denise. Thanks for having me on the show, and thanks to Wanda Noel for bringing us together and making this happen today.
Oh, okay, we're so delighted. I'm excited after reading up on your book. I am excited to about this interview to discover from you how the book came together, how you created it, and some of the motives behind the book, and not only for you as the author, but also some of the characters and what they do in the story. I wanted to ask you to start. When I was researching for the interview and I was reading about Stoneheart, and one of the first things that popped into my mind was to ask you, have you read any of Iceberg Slim's novels? I've read his books, and then he wrote years ago, he and Chester Himes, they took on street life issues head on, and I really enjoyed Iceberg Slim's novels. He just had a way with the way he wrote. It wasn't derogatory. It wasn't like downgrading or cheap or trashy. But he took those issues on square on, and his stories were so, they just engrossed you. They just grabbed you and took you in. A very, very powerful writer. So that said, I wanted to ask you, have you ever read any of his work?
Naturally, I'm familiar with Iceberg Slim. I haven't had the pleasure of reading any of his books yet, but just with the little that I do know about him, we do have something in common, and that is that we both write about what we know. He was writing with expert authority about his subject matter, and I feel like I was doing the same thing, you know, with Stoneheart the Bronx, being a longtime resident of the Bronx and having, you know, various personal experiences and, you know, being observant and, you know, being the type of person that's curious about people and, you know, ask a lot of questions. So, you know, in that respect, I see something, you know, similar between myself and him.
Okay, okay. And I want to ask you, so he definitely came from the environment that he wrote about, as do you. And that makes me think about music, how a lot of rappers, when they rap, all of them don't come from the environment that they actually talk about. But I think it does make a person an expert. And we've had other guests on the show one in particular who was in a boxing arena who also came from, I believe it was the Bronx. He lived it. So when you write about it, you are an expert because you know this firsthand. I wanted to ask you, do you use the experiences, and I think you've already answered this question, that do you use fictional, do you fictionalize these experiences, or do you use actual experiences, situations from your own life to move the story stone hard forward? Do you fictionalize them, or do you just take things that actually happen and pop them right down into the story?
Well, the book, let me state at the beginning that, you know, it's not autobiographical in any way. So it is a work of fiction, but because it's urban fiction is the type of fiction that reflects reality, you know, in a very realistic type of way. So if it was like a painting, you know, there's different styles of painting that artists use. There's impressionistic, there's realistic, you know, there's various types of art. And so the type of art that I'm using as a novelist, urban fiction, so it is very realistic. So I think in many ways urban fiction is reality disguised as fiction. So the story is a work of fiction, but it's a very realistic story. You know, then I kind of balance that out because, you know, there's mystical elements to the story as well. But
I picked that up in researching it. Who is Jelena, and why is she so important to Stoneheart? Who is, tell our listeners here off the shelf, who is Jelena?
Well, Jelena is one of the main female characters in the book, and she becomes the girlfriend of the central character. And she's the type of woman that is not afraid to use her sexuality to seduce a man and get from him whatever she wants. And her vision, it was strictly a material vision, you know, looking for money, looking to marry a rich man and have somebody take care of her. And, you know, that's why she's very important to the book. She's what would be called today, you know, a ride or die chick, because, you know, she's very loyal to her man. And again, just the way that she uses her womanhood to manipulate the men around her, to her, sexuality is a power. And if you want, I mean, I could read a little introductory something about Jelena too, which would give you know, the listeners something. Because, she is definitely something else. So I will read this one. The Rise of Jelena. It's an excerpt. I mean, this is an excerpt, but I give my excerpt's name. So, in the half-light of the park, she seemed to flow away from him and lose shape. This creature of the night had been called into existence by nothing less than the creative power of pure, exalted sex magic. Alavelle welcomed the transformation called forth by her magic. She realized that the wood in her hand was alive and that she had made it so. The thought swept her away in a flood of tantalizing possibility. She had the power to control and influence the men in her world with her sexuality, and she would unleash this power on Alavelle tonight. She decided right there and then that she would teach him that her sexuality was queen. She would make him beg for the chance to swear allegiance to her. After tonight, she would own him. So that's the type of woman she is.
Yes, and I know from and for our listeners who, if they want to, those who have dialed in, if they want to switch over to Stonebox, StoneheartBX.com, and read more of the story as it, while they listen to the interview, they will understand that Jelena's early on at your website. I don't know exactly if it's early on in the story, but all of her ploys don't all meet a good end. But that said, it was so interesting. You said she's like a ride or die woman. She stays with she's loyal to this man, yet she sort of manipulated him to even for them to get together. And I'm just curious, this wasn't a question I was initially going to ask you, but that said, do you find that in these type of settings that the guy knows this woman is manipulating him with her sexuality, yet and still he makes her like his number one woman? Do you find that happens a lot? And then if the woman does, this is what my question is, I guess. How can she start off with this manipulative thing? She just says, I want a rich guy. I don't care who he is. I don't care who the guy is. It's the first rich guy I meet. And then she becomes loyal to this man. How does that change? How does that happen? How does that change happen? How do you go from, I don't want any rich guy to being loyal to this one man only?
Well, she, although attracted to him because of his potential, when she met, she meets him when he just comes out of prison. I mean, actually, they went to elementary school together also, but, you know, then their lives went their separate ways, so they meet up again after he comes out of prison.
So at that time,
so at that time, he's really just starting to, you know, uplift himself, but he carries himself like a dominant male, which, you know, in the dog world, which is another one of my passions, you know, we call that the alpha male. So he's definitely, you know, an alpha male, and she's attracted to that. And she's attracted, you know, to his good looks. And when the first night they go out together, he's at the club with some of his friends, and she's sitting at the table also, and he's talking about some of his plans, you know, for how they can, you know, make money together. And, you know, that gets her excited as well and makes her more attractive to her. So basically, you know, she found in him, she thought, everything that she wanted in a man, but he told her early on in the relationship that, listen, baby, you know, I'm damaged goods. You know, I don't really think, you know, you want to get hooked on me to this extent, blah, 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 blah. You know, but she doesn't listen to that. She thinks, like, that her love, you know, can fix him. And I think a lot of women do think that, you know, believe that they can make him change, you know. But the damage that was done to Olivelle, you know, it runs deep. You know, it was emotional, mental, and, you know, spiritual damage. So...
Right.
At the end, he accuses her of crime.
Don't tell the whole story, but
yeah.
you've already got like me intrigued. And even when I was reading about the story, and I could tell that Jelena, they almost are equally main characters in this story, the man and the woman. The interesting thing, and I'm glad I asked you that question, I didn't know they had gone to elementary school together. So they had a past. And I thought he was just some strange guy she met after she became a grown woman. So they had a past, and then they had a shared goal. They both wanted money, and I guess they both had a shared goal as well. That makes the story to me even more intriguing that they knew each other when they were children. Then there was this gap, you know. You said he went to prison. There was this gap in time that I guess they didn't stay in contact, and then they came back in contact with each other. The excerpt at the website for Off the Shelf listeners about Jelena after the relationship has gone on for a while, when you hear what Kevin is saying now and you read that excerpt, it really will intrigue you, because you'll wonder, how did they go from this, what Kevin is saying to us today, to that excerpt on the website where things are not going so well? How did they get that far away from where they started, particularly with the piece that you just thrown in about them being friends in elementary school? How did that huge change, and there's a massive change, come about? And I think that's one of the great things that moves stories forward. When people see characters change so much, they want to know, how did this happen? How did this happen? And a good story will reveal that. Through the characters' dialogue and choices and actions that they make. Denise, just to comment on that.
That's very sharp that you picked that up, because the book is actually a character study where we follow the main character from childhood through adulthood, and even these other characters that come into his life. I'm also taking, you know, that angle of being a character study, and I actually get you inside each of the characters' minds, so you see how they think and how they operate, and what their value system is all about.
Yeah, I think that's one of the key things that helps to move a story forward, because the reader has to care about the character, and something has to happen to the character that makes that keeps the reader intrigued, so they keep turning the pages. And I think that that you have pulled that off. I wanted to ask you, Kevin, and I have a little bit of a cold, and that's why I sound a little stuffy. But how old were you when you started writing? And I wanted to ask you, and I usually ask most of our guests this, how old were you when you started writing, and was there a single incident that happened that sparked your interest in writing and made you say, you know, this is something I want to do, or that made you think, I'm a writer?
Well, I started writing stories in elementary school, and the stories that I wrote, I observed that they always had an impact on the people around me, my classmates, teachers, and other adults as well. So, you know, I realized early on that I had this ability as a storyteller, and writing is, you know, one of the mediums for telling stories. But I really didn't come to grips with it for years after that, because the actual practice of sitting down writing didn't appeal to me that much. I'd much rather have been outside, you know, playing basketball with my friends, you know, running in the park, because as a writer,
right,
you know, it's that solitary thing where you're sitting down, putting pen to paper,
and to some degree while
you're doing it, you have this feeling that, damn, wow, life is passing me by out there.
Yes.
So the turning point for me where I decided to really dedicate my life to it is that I wasn't happy with the way that my life was going, and I was sitting at home one day in my apartment, and I was looking to get off the track that my life was on and get it onto another track, and I said, well, what should I do? Where could I go? And I just opened myself up for an answer and inspiration, and the answer came to me, look around you, books. I mean, as I looked around my living room, I was surrounded by books. As I went to my bedroom, books. As I went to my kitchen, you know, books. So books had been the one constant in my life, you know, the one thing that, I mean, in a sense you could say had never failed me. And I just realized that, listen, I got to stop trying to run away and escape from my destiny. You know, I'm here to be a storyteller, so I might as well just accept it and, you know, and get on with it. So that's when I kind of accepted it. So to me, I say the writing is, you know, it's a calling. It's something that I have to do in order to feel fulfilled in my life. And without it, you know, I feel like a certain emptiness.
Now, how old were you again when you realized this?
Would be the mid-20s, yes.
Wow. That is something that you, oh my goodness, I have to commend you on that. That you you took the time to see that you didn't like the way your life was going. And rather than the blame another person or some situation outside of you, you took a look at yourself and then the answer came to you. So many of us look for the answer outside of us, and that's why we don't get the answer, because it's not outside of you, it's inside of you.
Absolutely,
I really
from within,
on that.
From within, without question.
Yes. Yes. I want to next another character, Olivelle, and that's the guy. I got to tell you, right off, when I read the excerpt on your website, I just did not like this guy. I did not like this guy, and I had so much sympathy for Jelena, and even now I feel like, why did you get with this guy? And he just sounds like somebody who is so easy to not like. And I want to ask you, in the story, I know you know you said he told her he's damaged goods, but is he like a villain in the story? And I just couldn't understand why Jelena stayed with him. I don't want you to tell the whole story. I don't want you to give it away. But that's when I felt myself like emotion coming up in me. I said, I don't like this guy at all. He is just Is he like a villain in the story? Did you intend
not at all? I think you'll see that. When you start from the beginning, that he's kind of a sympathetic character, because once you see him as an adult, having already seen his childhood, you understand exactly why he is the way that he is. And that's something that I wanted to really pinpoint and nail down, because that's something that you don't see in a lot of real world stories of, you know, so-and-so, you know, has a run-in with the law and gets arrested or does something bad. You know, Larry Davis years ago in the Bronx, if you remember the story, he was involved with some cocaine cops and he ended up shooting a bunch of them. And we don't understand, you know, we sit back sometimes and we'll say, like, wow, what kind of mindset did this guy have that he could do something like that or think like this and behave like that? So in the case of Olivelle, because you've been with him from childhood, you know, you understand exactly that this man is a product of his environment, and as intelligent as he is, he never became more than his environment made him. So he used his intelligence to dominate, you know, his environment. And a man like him is some point in the book where it says that, let's see if I can find it, but it basically says that Olivelle, from a very young age, was surrounded by desecration. And to guys like Olivelle, without guidance, or without teachers that cared about him, without parents that was involved in his life, you know, he thought that wrong was right.
Do you think, though, that and I do agree that we do need positive influence, but I know the environment that I came up in. And do you think that, I don't know if it's something within some people, you can put two brothers or two sisters in the same family, same situation, same environment, one go left and one go right. Do you think it's totally the environment? As I was listening to him, particularly the way he talked to Delina, I just did not like him. I really did not like him. And I understand what you're saying about his childhood. But didn't they grow up, him and Delina, didn't they grow up in the same environment? Is it all just environment, Kevin, or is some of that really just out of there?
It's definitely, it's both. I mean, the environment starts off to imprint you, starts imprinting you. At a certain point in your life, though, you have to take responsibility for your life, for your actions, and the results that you're producing in your life. And even in the case of Olivelle, he had choices along every step of the way. Along every step of the way, there was this door to a spiritual dimension that would open, and he would peer inside and look, and he would say, wow, but no, I don't know how to, you know, I don't know how to incorporate this into my daily life. I don't understand how this is going to help me get a dollar. So he would turn away from that door. Basically, what he did is took the path of least resistance. And that's what a lot of people do. They take the path of least resistance, which is not necessarily the path that's going to really help you fulfill all your goals and dreams.
I think that's a key point you just made. What are the two choices seems easiest to me? Which one do? And that's where self-confidence comes into. Which of these two choices do I think I can do? And then somebody says, well, I dropped out of high school. I don't have this. I don't have that. I don't think I can go down to Princeton, I'll just say, for the area I live in, and get a job down there. So let me go just sling some drugs. That also has to do with self-confidence. That comes in as well. What do you think you can do? And then if you think that you can only do illegal things, that's probably the route that a person takes. If you have enough confidence to think you can go toe-to-toe with folks in a boardroom, you'll probably go that way. I wanted to ask you next to tell us about 1 to 2 key conflicts. And again, I don't want you to hear the story away. That happened in Stoneheart, just enough to whet off-the-shelf listeners' appetites. They go out and get a copy of the book. But tell us about 1 or 2 key conflicts that happened in Stoneheart without giving the story away.
1 or 2 key conflicts. Well, one of the struggles really throughout the book is Olivelle's struggle to exercise a material dominion over his world. For some reason, decided that your money was the total solution. And so that's what he sets his sights for. And he actually, at a certain point in his life, begins to blossom and excel, in this area. So the way he does it, though, he gets into crime, but he doesn't, this guy's very smart. This guy's not out there, dealing drugs or anything like that. You know, he does it with crimes that would just amaze you. But because of that type of lifestyle that he was living, there's a consequence for that. And this is a book where on the back cover of the book, it says, why not live a gangster's lifestyle? And that's what it says on the back of the book. And some people misconstrued that, thinking that I was trying to, rap songs. Yeah, thinking
right.
that I was trying to promote.
Exactly.
This book does not glamorize a criminal lifestyle. It takes you inside and shows you the realities, shows you the stress that go along with it, shows you the headaches of having workers that are unreliable. I mean, you can imagine in corporate America the problems you have with your workers.
Right.
Imagine him picking up people that, with GEDs that didn't even graduate from high school and not showing up for work. It gets you into the stress. It gets you into the fear, so it doesn't glamorize the gangster lifestyle at all. So that's one key conflict, this, struggle for money. Another struggle in the book would be, another key conflict would be a struggle between him and one of his best friends, and this character's name is Debo, and he does want to get into the drug game, and he wants to be the man, he wants to be the kingpin, he wants to be the man, and Olivelle basically tells him, listen, if you want to be the man, then go ahead, step up and be the man, but the problem is a lot of you guys are saying that you want to be the man, and then when you become the man, you find out that you weren't ready for it. So this guy basically goes off and does become a drug dealer, and so there's a little conflict between him and Olivelle.
You have a lot going on in Stoneheart. You have definitely whet my appetite about this story. There's a lot going on. The character.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an epic novel, and it's, you know, 360 plus pages, so it's going to keep you turning for for a number of weeks.
Wow. How long did it take you to write Stoneheart?
I took 13 months from beginning to end, and that includes doing the rewrites. So, you know, there were 5 rewrites.
Okay. Did you receive formal writing training? Your style is very, very crisp. Very crisp. The writing is very, very tight. So it seemed like I could tell that you had some type of training because your talent is obvious. Did you go to school? Have you worked with a lot of different other writers, writing critique groups? How did you hone your craft?
Well, the way that I hone my craft and the way that I recommend that anybody hone their craft that wants to get involved in this is that, number one, you know, writers read, okay? And that might shock and amaze some people because especially now we're living in the era of self-published authors, and I find a lot of guys writing books and then talking to them, finding out, but they don't read books. And to me, I think that there's a disconnect there, and I think you'll see that reflected in the quality of the writing. So number one, writers read. So I've always been a voracious reader. And you've got to read not just from the standpoint of like, oh, yeah, that was a good book, I enjoyed that story. No, where you're breaking down the dialogue, you're studying the dialogue, you're studying plot, you know, you're struggling how characters, you're struggling, you know, what is moving the story forward, and you're struggling, you know, the dramatic arc of the story, which is basically the beginning, the middle, and the end. So writers read. Number two, writers write. Okay, so you've got to write on a regular basis. Okay. Writing on a regular basis. Number three, be clear on your reason why. You know, why are you getting involved with this? And going back to when I started a sport karate magazine, you know, over a decade ago when I had that moment that I was telling you about, that moment of clarity. So I started a sport karate magazine. There was so many times when I was doing that magazine that I wanted to quit because the learning curve was so steep. I mean,
listen,
I was a writer.
What's the name of the magazine again? Say it again,
on
please.
On Point. On Point magazine.
On Point. Okay. On Point magazine.
Right.
Okay.
So I was approaching this from a writer, so I knew I could tell a story well, but there were so many things around that, the business of that, the technology of that. It was just a tremendous learning curve, and so many times I got frustrated. So many times I wanted to quit. But what kept me going was the vision of what my life would look like if I succeeded with this venture. And that's what kept me going. That's what powered me through the tough times. So I always tell aspiring writers, people say that they want to write because everybody wants it, but not everybody is willing to pay the price and take the actions and, you know, stay on a course of consistent, massive action until you see the thing through to completion. So be clear on your reason why, and then, you know, become a student of the craft of writing, and then become a student of the business of writing. You know, so those are some monster principles.
Yeah, and I thank you for sharing those with our listeners who would like to become writers, as you are yourself a published author themselves, and I think it was I really appreciate you sharing that when you were working with On Point magazine, that when you would get frustrated, the way you kept yourself encouraged, you would imagine what would your life be like once you had achieved the vision that you had set forth when you initially started the magazine. You actually had to have something that was motivating you to do it before any of us do anything. Something's motivating us to do it. So sometimes when you get discouraged, you have to go back and remind yourself about what was that initial motive that you had and what will your life be like when you achieve it. But what I really appreciate you sharing was you didn't make it sound like 1, 2, 3. It's just like snapping your fingers or twitching your nose like on Bewitched, and voila, there it is. It takes some work. It takes some work, and you might have hit some bumps in the road, but are you willing to stay the course? And I think that's with anything. So often we look for that easy route, which is what Allivelle did. You know, you said he opted for the choice of least resistance. Sometimes to get the best thing might take a little more work than what you might initially think that it will call for. Kevin, I know for our off-the-shelf listeners, I wanted to let them know, I didn't know you had created your own magazine, so I commend you on that, On Point magazine. You've also interviewed athletes and other people across industries, and in particular, I read about your interview with the former boxing champion Roy Jones Jr. I wanted to ask you, how did you land that writing gig?
Okay, yeah, I'll tell you that because that's an interesting story. But before I do, let me just address what you said, because the points you were bringing up were so crucial and so on point. Years ago, when Jesse Jackson was running for president in the 80s, he said there's no shortage of talent in the African American community. He said you could go to any Baptist church on a Sunday, you know, and verify that for yourself. He said, but there comes a shortage of character. There comes a lack of willingness, you know, to get on to pursue a course of action, you know, and see the thing through to completion. So he was basically saying that, you know, excellence means, you know, seeing the thing through to completion and writing a book, you know, it's a long-term project. Like you're saying, it's not going to pop mm-hmm. out overnight. So, yeah, I just wanted, that just reminded me of that, what Jesse Jackson said. The way I got to Roy Jones Jr., my magazine was a sport karate magazine, or, you know, martial arts magazine with a hip-hop flavor, as we called it. And even though Roy Jones is not involved in karate, I said, well, listen, you know, I argue that the boxing is a martial art, and, you know, so we should do a story with Roy Jones. Well, I'm a big boxing fan also. And so the way I found him is I just happened to be reading the Source magazine, which is, you know, a magazine that I loved and a magazine that I used to model a lot in terms of, like, page layout and design when I was learning how to put a magazine together. You know, the Source is the magazine that I went to a lot. They had a full-page ad there. Roy Jones was having an album come out. And on the bottom, there was a telephone number. So I called that telephone number. So this guy picks up. I identify myself. And I realize that the guy I'm talking to the other end of the phone is Roy Jones Jr. himself. And I'm like, Roy, what are you doing?
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm like, Roy, what are you doing answering? I'm like, what are you doing answering the phone, Roy? And he's like, I work here. You know what I mean?
Oh, my goodness.
So that it started just like that, you know, and you know, then I met him.
Wow.
Took the photos, and you know,
you have confidence. You don't know how many people would see the phone number and never dial that number, and a lot of people would, but a lot of people wouldn't. So that there shows me that you wanted to get it, so you took the action.
Denise, let me tell you this. You know what's important about that? A lot of people talk about, you know, the things and qualities that you need to succeed. So people will talk about, you know, cash, contacts, and money. And contacts, they act like contacts is like some magical thing that you have or you don't have. And I'm always telling people, listen, the way that you get the contact is you pick up the phone, you contact the person, and now you have the contact.
Yes.
It's just like that.
But you have to have the confidence to do that. A lot of people tell themselves, nah, I'm not going to dial that number. That's Roy Jones Jr. And they just don't have the confidence to do it. They just don't. And that's why confidence is so, so important when it comes to success. I think it is anyway. What was it like interviewing the boxing champ? Roy Jones Jr. was kind of like Floyd Mayweather today back then. What was it like when you were interviewing him? He always came across as a humble person to me. Was he that way, and what was it like? What was that interview like for you?
Well, I would say that Roy Jones Jr. is a beautiful human being, someone who's very happy with where he was in life at that time. At that time, he was at the top of the light heavyweight division. He was the king. He reigned supreme. And he was also getting ready to launch his first rap album that he was very excited about, you know, called Round One. So to be around someone like that and to spend time with someone that is that successful, I mean, it was just great because he's so happy and he's so smiling, you know, all the time. He lives in a mansion. He has a basketball court on the first floor of his house, you know, built in. You open this door, you think you're going into a closet or another bedroom, and it's this full-court basketball court. I wouldn't use the word humble to describe him. I mean, he's very confident in his ability, and, you know, he's willing to speak about, you know, his greatness in the sport. So some people, you know, they kind of misconstrue that. And I would differentiate him from Mayweather because Mayweather, you know, talks the talk and stuff, but Mayweather doesn't have the record of accomplishment that a lot of the names that he calls out. He's constantly calling out the names of Sugar Ray Leonard, Roy Jones Jr., Sugar Ray Robinson, and saying that he considers himself to be on their level, but you don't have the record of accomplishment that those guys do. Roy Jones doesn't duck opponents, you know, the way Mayweather ducks opponents. He fought everybody out there. And, it was a great experience. And if someone wants to look at a short excerpt of that, I have a video up on there on my YouTube channel, which is Urban Filmworks is my YouTube channel. So if you go to YouTube and put in Urban Filmworks, and that's Works with an X, you'll see the, excerpts from the interview there with Roy Jones and the photographs and stuff that I took.
Okay. At the start of the Roy Jones Jr. article, I know you wrote for our listeners, Roy Jones Jr. uses boxing as a medium for self-expression, and the struggle for self-expression lies at the essence of all art. I wanted to ask you, has writing novels proved to be for you, Kevin, the most effective way to express yourself so far?
Writing has, not just writing novels. I wouldn't limit it to just writing novels, but writing, yes. Yes, absolutely. And I think that Roy is very clear that one of the reasons that he's so much better than the other fighters out there, and Sugar Ray Leonard, you know, once said the same thing, is because boxing to them is more than just a physical thing. It's not just boxing. It's like you're saying, they're looking at it as self-expression. Sugar Ray Leonard said that it was a way for him to, that God gave him this gift, and that when he's in the ring fighting and winning, that's his way of you know, giving a gift back to God, you know, using your gift, which is an awesome concept, and that can apply to anything. If you have a gift and a talent, but yet you're not using it, you know, it's kind of, it's one of the saddest things in the world.
Oh, okay. I wanted to ask you next, do you blog? And if you do blog, where can off the shelf? And it looks like we have a listener who might have a question. Let me. Hello, do you have a question for Kevin Thomas?
Am I talking to you now?
Yes, you're on off the shelf. Thank you for tuning in. Do you have a question for our guest, Kevin?
I have a comment,
Thomas,
if you don't mind, and then a question.
Sure.
The comment is that I have read Mr. Thomas's book. I read it twice. First time I read it because I couldn't stop turning the pages. The next time I read it to really get into the characters and what made them work. The book is moral, it's sexy, it's exciting. Anyway, I highly recommend it. So I just wanted to say that when Mr. Thomas could hear me. But secondly, I want to ask him, are you going to make a movie of the book? And if you're thinking about that, could you give it to Oprah Winfrey? Because I think she would do a great job with it.
Well, thanks for the compliment. I would love to see it as a movie. That, for me to initiate that, though, at this point, you know, is a little bit beyond me. So if you think Oprah Winfrey is the one that can bring it to the silver screen, call her up and let her know. Send her a letter. Maybe we could even put you in the movie. But, I think it would work well as a movie. But with a movie, you know, I want to make sure that it is done right, because a lot of times with a movie, they want to take, in a book like this, they would want to take the most base, the most crass elements out of it and just blast that all over the way and basically rip the heart out of the story. So I really wouldn't be too, you know, happy to see that type of depiction done.
I would love to see your movie. Thank you, Mr. Thomas, and thank you, Denise.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Appreciate the question. And that is, you know, that your book, your characters and your plot and the twists and turns and your book Stoneheart could transfer itself easily into a screenplay. The next thing that I wanted to ask you, Kevin, as you maybe noodle that thought, is do you blog? And if you do, where can off the shelf listeners find your blog so they can keep up with you online?
Yeah, I have a blog at InsideStoneheart.com. Okay, that's InsideStoneheart.com. And I have another blog that I just launched recently, a completely other area. Inside Stoneheart is a resource for writers and readers. So you'll see there I have the menu items. It's broken down, the craft of writing, the business of writing, the culture of writing. And then I have another thing called Books Worth Writing, which is, you know, where I'll be doing book reviews. And so that is one blog, and then I have another blog in a completely different niche, you know, one of my hobbies, and that blog, you can find it at Aquarium Knowledge, aquariumknowledge.com. And that one I just launched,
Kevin,
basically this week.
Kevin, when our listeners go over to your website, which, again, I want to give them the URL, is StoneheartBX, and B like in boy, BX.com. When I first went over there, and I was able to get in through another way, but when I first went over there, it asked, you can't get to the site, actually, to the deeper into the site without giving your email address. Is that, what was your intent behind that, or is there another way that our listeners can access your site? I know you want to get the contact information so you can keep in touch with them, but is there another way that people can, some people might not want to give their email address. Is there another way that they can get into your site so they can read the excerpts, they can read your blog and enjoy your blog, and find out more about the story?
Yeah, someone can go directly to the blog, which is insidestoneheart.com. So someone can definitely do that. The reason that I have the opt-in form where you can opt in for my communication list, that's the one at stoneheartbx.com, is because I want to know my readers. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a great thing for us as authors. You know, we don't get enough feedback from our audience. And I love the feedback. I appreciate the feedback, you know, from the lady that just gave me that. I appreciate, you know, the feedback that other people have given me. And it helps. Like when I first put the website out and I started the email list, you know, people were telling me, hey, there's too many clicks and this and that. So I went back and I looked at it and I made the adjustment so it's less clicks to get to the, you know, to get to the, you know, to the other side, so to speak. So, yeah, feedback is very important to us. And that's really the bottom line. I want to know my readers. I wish to know my readers. And even though some people are struggling with that concept of having that opt-in form there, you know, I'm going to stay there and stand by that because that's what has to happen in terms of marketing. And taking your marketing to the next level. Too many writers that I'm seeing out here just have a web page, a one-page static web page, you know, with an order form there. Like, why would you do that when all these other, when the top internet marketers out there have video on their website, they have audio on their website, and so we want to come out at that same level. So I'm going to keep that up there as an example that I think people should follow. If you follow that whole marketing funnel through, sign up there. See how it opens you up to some more videos that I don't even talk about on the first page, you know, just these, like, bonus videos that I don't even talk about on the first page. And then it gets you to the page where you can buy the book at a discount. You know, this is the type of marketing funnel. This is the type of marketing funnel, you know, that we need. So I'm going to keep that out there, and I encourage people to look at it, model it, and take from it, you know, whatever they can take to apply to their own projects.
Right, because there's no charge. There's no charge for our listeners.
Right.
You just simply...
Exactly.
Put in your email address, and then you go into the Stoneheart world and get to learn more about the characters and the author, Kevin himself, Kevin Thomas. I wanted
Denise,
to ask
imagine,
you.
Imagine, Denise, when me and you.
I
was just going to say quickly, imagine, Denise, when me and you were coming up, if we had, you know, the authors of our favorite books and we could email them and they would communicate with us back and forth. That would be priceless, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the type of opportunity we can offer now. So I'm going to take advantage of that.
That is true. I've asked a few guests on our show this, and I want to ask you this, Kevin. How did writing Stoneheart change you as a person?
Wow, how did it change me as a person? Well, on one level, you know, it gave me a deep sense of satisfaction because this is a story that I had been carrying around for years and years, and I kept struggling again against myself like I normally do, right? Struggling against myself, not writing it, thinking like, oh, wow, no one's going to publish this. You know, it wouldn't get out there and whatever. And then a lady by the name of Terry Woods came along and wrote this book called, oh, God, what was that book Terry Woods wrote? It's a shame. I can't even remember Terry Woods' book now. But anyway, she wrote this book, spent 2.5 years trying to get it published with a mainstream publisher, collected 21 rejection slips, and then said, the hell with this, I'm going to publish it myself. She did that in a very short period of time, had sold 300,000 copies. In a couple of years after that, had sold over 3 million copies, and her book was in the same genre. And she's from your neck of the woods, also from Philadelphia, and the story was actually set in Philadelphia. Oh, True to the Game, that's the name of the book. So when I saw that, I said, yeah, now it's time to downrate this book.
Wow.
So
How did it change you, though? How did actually writing it change you? How did actually writing this story change Kevin Thomas?
It put more responsibility on me because now I'm kind of like a spokesperson for the area that I wrote about, which is the Bronx, and I become kind of like a spokesperson for urban issues. Because the book touches on a whole lot of urban issues from poverty, crime, child abuse. So in that way, I guess you could say it changed me. But then another way that it changed me is in the sense of, and I published this book myself because I had the publishing company, you know, from the magazine. So, I mean, I don't know if you call that self-publishing. The company was already out there. But anyway, it's my own company that published it. So just the satisfaction of knowing that this book will never be out of print, will never be taken off the market, and going to a mainstream publisher as attractive as that is, going to a mainstream publisher, you know if the book's not doing something in 6 weeks, they want to kill it, send it back, you know, get it off the shelf. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't, exactly. I couldn't live with that. And I couldn't live with that unless it's a big hefty check they're hitting me with, you know. So that satisfaction of knowing that my children's grandchildren that I probably will never be alive to meet, they will know me through my writings that I've left behind. So I'm leaving a footprint.
Wow.
With this writing, and that's an idea that's, you know, very compelling to me, very appealing to me, this idea of, first of all, writing something that's worthy of outliving me for hundreds and hundreds of years, and then just the idea that, you know, future generations of my family that are yet unborn will know me through my writing, through the blogs, the websites that will still be up.
Wow, that's very interesting. I don't often think of that from that standpoint as a writer, but that is very interesting. People could get to know you because parts of an author, fiction or nonfiction, as much as I know I've tried, and I've talked to other authors about this, you try to keep yourself out of the story, and then you go back and you read it, and you're like, wow, that's a little bit of me there.
Parts of you
that find their way into a story. I want to talk to you about character development, but before I do that, I wanted to ask you, when you grew up, did you know somebody like Olivelle or Jelena? Did you know anybody like those people when you grew up, particularly Olivelle?
I didn't know anyone like Olivelle per se, but I did know someone that committed at least one of the crimes. There's a crime in there where he later gets pursued. It's all credit card fraud, to make it long story short, but when you see the way he does the credit card fraud, it's like nothing you've never seen before. But anyway, so the credit card fraud, I knew someone that committed that crime, and that's how in the story I knew that the enforcement agency that pursuing him, which was the Secret Service, that's the only way I knew that. I never would have known that the Secret Service got involved in credit card fraud if not for this person that I met. So although I definitely didn't meet anyone like Jelena. I would have probably liked to, though, but these are like composites of different people, and they're kind of like, you know, you could meet people just like that out there for sure, you know. In the Bronx, definitely people like that absolutely exist. So
when you create your characters, do you use an outline and character sketches when you create, or do you just start with a blank page and just start writing?
I'll tell you how I do it. I start out with an idea of the story in the sense of beginning, middle, and end. Okay, so I knew how their story was going to begin. I knew how it was going to end. And, I actually wasn't that sure about the beginning, but I knew the beginning and the ending, so I just started writing. Now, when I write, the first draft is written in the form of a screenplay. And the reason I write the reason I use that structure is because the screenplay format, you know, is ridiculously easy. So you can have that first draft knocked out in 2 to 3 months. No problem. So the first draft of Stoneheart, which probably took, like I said, I guess like, you know, 2 to 3 months to do the first draft, and it was about, I think it was 96 pages only. Okay, it was 96 pages, the first draft. So then I'll go back and start doing the second draft, and that one will be, you know, longhand novel style. And what I'm doing there while I'm writing, I put myself in a very receptive state, and I kind of reach inwardly in my mind. I reach inwardly to kind of like a room or a space or whatever where these creative ideas flow to me, and I start writing. So when I wrote the first draft, there's a character in the story who was not even thought of or conceived of, and it's one of Olivelle's, his best friend's girlfriend. And, there's basically like a whole chapter there on her too. And she was not even conceived of in the first draft. You know, she came to me like in the third draft, like out of nowhere. And so I don't know everything that I'm going to do, and I know some writers write like that, and I don't understand that. I don't understand how you could know like every single point before you even put the pen to paper, because for me, you know, the story, I guess what I'm saying is the story is unveiling itself. The story is revealing itself to me as I write it.
Yes. I have used outline very rarely. I'm one of those who sits down with a blank page and just gets started. But you are the first writer. Now, I'm not saying you're the only writer who does this. You're the first writer I have met or heard who starts the story as a screenplay. You are the absolute first. I've never heard anyone else say that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you the first ever. In all the years I've been writing that, I've heard an author say they started as a screenplay, then they go back and they flesh it out into longhand, and then they edit it from there. That is a that's a first. I have heard authors say they see like the story taking place like a movie in their mind as they're writing. Now that I've heard writers say. Before we're coming down to just our last 9 minutes, and I want to make sure you've already given some valuable tips to our off-the-shelf listeners who themselves are just they are very passionate about writing, and they want to know how can they become like you, a published author. And you've shared some valuable tips. You know, it might not be easy the whole way, but you have to keep yourself encouraged and stay focused on your end goal. But I wanted to ask you, because you created your own magazine, and you also have written, worked as a journalist for other periodicals, what advice can you offer to writers who, if you can remember how it felt to want that first story, not even the first book, just to want to get in a newspaper or magazine for the first time, and you keep getting these rejections, and how you felt then, because I can remember how I felt. What advice can you give to writers, Kevin, who are there and they're seeking to land their first magazine or newspaper assignment? What would you say to them to help them get through that door?
Okay, I would tell you this story very quickly. The first article that I wrote for On Point Magazine was written for another magazine, which is Karate Illustrated, and anybody involved in the martial arts world knows Karate Illustrated and Black Belt are the two top magazines out there. So this story went to Karate Illustrated. This article, they rejected it. They came back to us. It was, me and two of the friends from the martial arts world, and we're looking at this like, wow, how could they reject this? This is like one of the best things. This would have been like one of the best articles they had ever published. And it's because they rejected that, because Karate Illustrated and Black Belt rejected that. That's what gave birth to On Point Magazine. So I said, hey, I got to do it myself. So my point is this. We're at a point now, we're at an age now in our civilization where your destiny is in your own hands. The barriers to publication have been removed. So if you can't get a traditional deal, you can always do it yourself, but I do caution someone taking that path, and I do warn somebody taking that path, because what I'm seeing with a lot of self-published work, I'm seeing a lack of quality writing, a lack of quality storytelling, and that's because you're not going through the same screening process that writers used to go through years ago, where you had your editor tearing it up and making you go back and rewrite it.
Yeah.
Remember, rewriting is the essence of professional writing. My own book went through 5 rewrites. So again, you can take your destiny into your own hands. You can bring a book to market for less than $500, but don't skimp on the quality of the writing, the quality of the storytelling.
Right.
By all means, you know, have an editor go over it and be your own worst critic, because that's going to help you get better. Be your own worst critic when you're editing your stuff. I didn't have anybody edit, Stoneheart the Bronx for me. I edited it myself, which I don't recommend, you know, but I did it because, you know, money. You know,
right.
You got to pay for this, pay for that.
It's almost impossible. It's almost impossible as a writer to, as hard as you think you're doing it, because I myself have done that and gone over and over and over and over. It's hard to catch everything. And one way as a writer, if you do self-edit, I encourage people to read their work out loud. Because when you read it out loud.
I was going to say that, yes.
And then don't defend what jumps out at you. Don't defend it and leave it there. When something jumps out at you, like, that sounds awkward. Or that doesn't sound right. Act on it. Don't defend it. Because as writers, we tend to, even with editors, that's why writers and editors bump heads a lot. Writers like to defend what their work. And I'm not saying that sometimes you shouldn't, but also be open to some input, because I say this on Off the Shelf. As a writer, you're going to get the input. You're either going to get it from an editor, or you're going to get it from a whole lot of readers. You're getting it from somebody, a book reviewer, an editor, reader. Somebody's going to give you some feedback. I would rather get it from an editor before the book goes to print. I would rather get it there than get some negative feedback from a lot of readers or book reviewers. So there's no way around it if you're an author. You cannot work with an editor because you don't like feedback, that type of feedback on your work, and you like to defend your work. You can do that, but you're going to get that feedback. It's going to come either from readers or it's going to come from book reviewers, but you are going to get it. Kevin, as we come down to the last 5 minutes of the show, and I have so enjoyed the show, I wanted to ask you, what is the overarching message you want readers to gain from reading your works? And I'm talking about your entire body of work. What's that overarching message you want readers to take away?
My overarching method is that, we are all divine creatures, and because of that, there's personal greatness inside each and every one of us. It's time for everybody to wake up and become more action-oriented, become an activist. We're living in a very dangerous time now where it's our own federal government moving in an increasingly anti-American direction. A lot of us, and I'll put myself in there, we were asleep at the wheel. We weren't taking our responsibilities as citizens seriously, and because of that, that's what allowed our government to start taking more powers and eroding away at our basic freedoms. The overarching message or story of a book like Stoneheart the Bronx, it's a work of insight. You're going to get insight into the lifestyle, insight into the values, insight into the culture, and also you'll see how I sneakily but put the history of the Bronx in there too, with the American Indians, with the burning, the way the Bronx was burned down to the ground in the 70s. So you'll see how I snuck that in there. And very important, just to piggyback on your last point, Stoneheart is available as an e-book for only $9. It's available as a physical book, and it's available as an audiobook. Audiobooks are very important now because so many people are not reading anymore. Our biggest problem in America years ago in terms of education and used to be illiteracy, those that couldn't read. Now our biggest problem is what I call illiteracy, those that can read but don't. So by putting out an audiobook, you can seduce those that are not reading books and suck them back in, bring them back into the vortex.
do you plan to write a sequel to Stoneheart?
No, that is complete. My next fiction novel will be about one man's response to police brutality, but that will be the third book. The next book is going to be a work of nonfiction where I look at the Barack Obama administration as a starting point to start talking about some of the solutions that we need to put into place to get America back on track and make it a great country again.
What are some of the comments you've received? We only have 2 minutes left. What are some of the comments you've received so far from readers who've read Stoneheart?
Well, one that sticks out of my mind is this guy said this Stoneheart was like crack. Like you said, it was like addicting. It's a compliment. It was addicting, but
it was a funny compliment.
You know, it was addicting. He couldn't put it down. I was surprised. At a certain point in the book, it gets very raw. And I made a decision early on that if I'm going to be as truthful to the story as I can be, as truthful to the characters, I have to take it there in certain points. I have to make the audience squeamish and this and that. So I've been asking a lot of people, to give them positive feedback. I'm saying, yeah, you didn't find it to be too raw, this and that, whatever. And people are saying no, because, I could relate to it 100%. A lot of people from the suburbs reading it was saying like, no, I didn't take it as being too raw, but I'm grateful that I didn't grow up in the city. So.
Oh, yes. Wow. People see it as they see the realism, the authenticity in the story, which is a compliment to you. For our off-the-shelf listeners, we are coming down to our last minute on today's show, and I just want to encourage you to go over and visit our special guest, Kevin Thomas, the author of Stoneheart. He's also a journalist, and he also founded his own magazine, On Point Magazine. He's online at www.stoneheartbx.com, and that's STONEHEARTB as in boy, X.com. Once you provide your email so he can keep in touch with you, you can get access to his videos, his audios, and his book excerpts, and you will enjoy reading and learning more about Stoneheart, the book, which is available ebook, audio, and in print. And I encourage you to go over and get a copy and support Kevin Thomas as he continues to move forward with his writing career. We thank you so much for being here with us on Off the Shelf today. We have so enjoyed you, and thank you for the tips and the advice that you shared and talking about your story, Stone Heart.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Thank you, and encourage you to continue with your writing career. To our listeners, we encourage you to come back next Saturday at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time in the morning, where I just so enjoy having you here with us as we move toward our seventh year here on the radio. And we have so many loyal listeners, and I thank all of you as our listener base continues to grow and grow and grow. And please continue to encourage your family and friends to tune in to Off the Shelf at 11 o'clock. You can turn it on the radio and while you're cleaning your house or you're working on something else on your computer. You don't have to be pinned down to the computer as you listen to the show, and you can enjoy what our special guest, like Kevin Thomas, the author of Stoneheart, share here with you every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock on Off the Shelf. And as always, I tell you that remember, you are so valued, so truly loved, and so, so blessed. Go out and create a wonderful day for yourself. Thank you for being here with us. Bye for now. Kevin, I'll shoot you an email.
Thank you very much.